Wouldn't it suck if they were ugly now?
They still have thick lashes, but they're just like
bald.
They're like melted.
Aww.
I was like, I was gonna like everybody trade an actual person could have. I was gonna say maybe they melted like a little candle.
Bald.
That's why they're bald. Their hair caught fire. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we are looking at sort of the, I believe this is called, this is technically the end of season four, but there's sort of a weird nebulous area where this takes place between series four and five.
I feel like that's kind of been the case for every Christmas special we've gone through.
Well, the reason I say that this time, as opposed to the previous ones, because they do sort of take place in this weird nebulous area. But here's the thing. There are four specials between the end of the last season and the start of the next season. That's why this really feels almost like series four and a half.
I mean, we can call it that if that's
better
like even, for you.
Even on the disc sets for it, they refer to this as the start of the 2009 specials, because in 2009 the show just had three specials. This came out obviously a week before 2009. This could get on Christmas 2008, but at the same time it sort of feels like the beginning of those, because this is the post Donna set of adventures.
Don't remind me.
Yeah, she's somewhere reminiscing on nothing.
Being a bitch.
Being a bitch. We will find out more about her in a couple specials, though. So it's not just
she's in a couple specials.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is that she comes back for Tennant's finale.
So, oh, okay. Yeah, so. I thought you were referring to the brand new specials that
came out.
So, spoiler alert, I do know about those.
Yeah, only Disney Plus has spoiled that for you.
Yeah, like to the nth degree.
Yeah, that's sort of
I could not evade that, even if I tried.
You're really, really pissed in the punch bowl there for me with me trying to keep some of this stuff a secret. But we do have some secrets in this episode. This special is called The Next Doctor.
The Neck Doctor.
The Next Doctor. The neck doctor would be a chiropractor.
The sex doctor.
The sex doctor. It's a doctor that teaches you how to text people sexually.
Whoa. This is a family podcast. How dare you say that?
Sorry, I'll watch my fucking language next time.
Whoa, Zachary. That is a no-no word.
So getting on topic again. I'm tempted.
We never left topic.
Yeah, I'm tempted to make the prefacy a little looser than usual.
Oh, what a change of pace!
Well, what I mean is, typically I ask you a couple questions and I make you come up with something.
And I get angry at you.
And you get angry at me. But I'm curious, when I tell you that the title of this is The Next Doctor, I would like to know if there's some kind of story that pops into your head.
Necro Doctor. Sorry. A story?
Yeah, like what do you think the story of the next doctor would be?
If I know. No words. God, Cassie. Language. I don't. Because here's the thing. We didn't not get a next doctor-ish in the episode previous, when we had a convenient clone of the doctor that just kind of lizarded that starfished into existence by growing from his own hand. And for whatever reason, despite being half human, was still capable of existing without needing to have his entire like existence / memory erased a la Donna.
Yeah, they also have like an offshoot doctor. I guess people call him the Metacrisis doctor. MC McD.
The grow a doctor.
The sea monkey doctor.
I mean, it, he,
He was in a tank.
He was in a tank. He did need to be fed energy
and mana. He had to rip off the top and then pour some juice in there. Some tang.
That's just brine food. Like, those are just brine shrimp. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just dead shrimp.
You mean to tell me they're not in there swinging on little trees?
The Sea Monkey marketing team did a wonderful job, because do you not think for a second I looked at those fuckers and went, ooh, I want to be one of them.
Well, so let's maybe think about where let me put it this way. I'm curious what you would have thought if you were a Doctor Who fan in 2008.
Okay.
I believe it was in September of that year, David Tennant announced that he was leaving the role. And then they announced that the next special is called The Next Doctor.
So if I were me in 2008, I would be a number. I'd be 12.
You'd be 12. Let's not bother with age. I recognize that.
I'm just really trying to channel, even if I was older then, mm-hmm. because I feel like the demographic is more family oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just learned that
the Davy Tenney.
Picture this. London, England, 2008. All right. So I've just learned David Tennant has announced that he will no longer be the Doctor. It is September. They start advertising and announcing in November, presumably December.
I don't know. I don't know the exact timeline. I will admit, because this was I didn't get into the show until 2010. So I will say that I wasn't present for it. I think they honestly might have been side by side. I think David Tennant announced his departure, but said that his departure would be a series of specials rather than another season. And the first special is called The Next Doctor. And just so you know, when a doctor announces their retirement, immediately betting pools start coming up, fan theories start happening about who is going to be cast as the next doctor.
I know that much just from more recent, mm-hmm. you know, particularly since I think we were together at this time when Jodie Whittaker was being chosen for Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't care, still don't. But
I remember you said that you were curious about seeing that show with a female lead.
And I still am, but I'm a contradiction always. So, so if I understand that David Tennant has just announced he will no longer be the Doctor, and this episode is called The Next Doctor, surely that means that this is going to be a regeneration episode. I have future vision, though, in the shape of knowing what the next three episodes are after this and understand that this fucker is still here.
Okay.
So I don't know what on earth the next doctor would be.
Okay.
Because I don't think that two of the same doctor can exist at the same time.
What you're saying
time.
Is you don't think Matt Smith is in this special.
No.
Okay.
Well, no, because now that you've said that, and mm-hmm. this whole time, I didn't know Matt Smith was coming up right after.
Yeah, Matt Smith is the 11th Doctor.
TBH, I thought it was the old guy.
Oh, Peter Capaldi?
Yeah.
No, Capaldi is after Matt Smith.
So, you, spoiler alert, I know who the next Doctor is now. Thanks for spilling
For what
the
it's worth,
tea.
Doctor Who fans also find out that it's Matt Smith before the regeneration on air, so... sorry that I hope I didn't spoil that for you too much.
I don't know what the next doctor could mean then. He does look good in the thumbnail though. Well, huh.
I will tell you that this episode takes place in the year 1851 on Christmas.
Okay. So it's them being cheeky then.
Okay. Go on.
That's all I got.
Them being cheeky. So I will tell you that it is, this is kind of a spoiler, but also knowing that he is not the next doctor, in actuality, in real life, you already kind of know where the story is going to go in this direction. This is about a man that believes he is the doctor.
Okay. I was going to say, or my suspicion is that it's, when I say being cheeky, I mean that they're using the term doctor to be
to be about a doctor.
Yes.
Like an actual doctor.
Yeah. And so the doctor is John Smith being the next doctor to do whatever.
Yeah. So this is about, and actually the guy who was in the special was sort of in the betting pool of people who thought he might play the 11th doctor.
So it is them being cheeky.
A little bit. Yeah.
I mean, it's the idea of somebody.
I'm sure it's also probably a chicken and egg situation. I don't know if he was in the betting pool because they knew he was in this special or if he was in the special because he was in the betting pool. You know, I don't know which one of those came first.
Fair.
But they do have a gentleman who believes he is the doctor. I'll let the story itself explain why that is. But just to get a little more into the traditional profassy. I do have a couple of point-worthy questions here for you.
Okay.
As this man believes he is the doctor, but is not, and again, reminding you, this episode takes place in 1851, what is his sonic screwdriver?
1851. London, England. Victorian times. Some kind of medical device. And I know that that's not...
I would take that.
Particularly, like, it's not specific, but missing
something you could find in a surgeon's bag at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd take that.
Okay.
Okay. And then in the same vein, in 1851, what is his TARDIS?
Oh, my God. Oh, man. It's either a horse and buggy or an outhouse. What would a Delulu in Victorian times use as a TARDIS? Because if this person understands that the doctor is like a fix-it guy, it could genuinely be either.
Where's the doctor? Oh, he's in the shitter, you know. Out in the back, outhouse.
Well, because I'm also trying to remember.
I will say, I don't know if they had outhouses in this time.
I think that was like specifically very American. They would have had.
Especially in a big city, I feel like they would have just like.
Here's the thing. I need you to understand. I'm getting my history confused because I'm currently learning a lot about medieval England, which is, you know, 500 years earlier. Because for them, you would shit in a bucket and then they had you would throw the bucket out into the street.
Yeah.
Or they had specific streets and lanes dedicated to pissing and shitting. Particularly during like the Black Plague, that was it was believed that the plague was brought upon by hot, moist environments. So keeping things that are tend to be hot and moist, shit, feces, blood, keeping that stuff together was supposed to help stave off the plague. You know, disgusting. By Victorian times, I think that there was, depending on how wealthy you were, there was formal plumbing.
Yes. From just a brief glance here, it looks like in around 1850 is when buildings started having plumbing in them.
If you were very wealthy, you would have houses that had several toilets. If you lived in a hostel, you would have only like one or two.
Mm-hmm.
It was far less. So bearing that all in mind, this wackadoo doctor's TARDIS, I'm getting horsey vibes. I don't know if I want to commit to horse and
buggy.
This is
my horse, TARDIS.
Yes. If you paint a horse blue with gelatin, like they did in The Wizard of Oz, turns out you can have a horse of any color. Did you know that?
A horse of a different color.
Did you know that? That they would paint the horses with gelatin and they kept on having issues with the horses licking it off?
I feel like I've heard that, but I wouldn't have like been able to quote that until you said it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, that's really funny. So you're gonna go with horse?
Will I get a point if it is horse and buggy?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
If there's a horse involved, you will get a point. All right. So we might keep dipping into more of like me asking you what you think a story might be as episodes go on, just because I feel like it's a fun. That was sort of the spirit of what I wanted the profassy to be before it became this like question and answer thing. I'm happy with how it's gone, but I also want to explore that a little bit more. So I might start just seeing what your vibe check is for things.
Okay.
But for now, we're going to watch the 2008 Christmas special, The Next Doctor.
The Neck Doctor. Necro Doctor.
Velcro Doctor.
The Knacky Doctor.
The Get Wrecked Doctor.
Whoa, I can't top that.
Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by
Space Cat.
In space, no one can hear you meow unless you're Space Cat.
Space Cat.
And we are back from The Next Doctor.
The Cybermen will rise.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting seeing Cybermen in an anachronistic time period, isn't it?
It was interesting. Particularly since I've never seen somebody thirst over a Cyberman, yet here we were.
Really? Which one?
What's her face? Mercy. Because they say the Cybermen will rise, and she goes, indeed they will, which I took to mean something far different.
Yes, Miss Hartigan certainly seemed to be okay with the Cybermen, if nothing else.
Oh, my God. Well, because everybody else seemed to...
Let's think about a man in uniform. And that uniform is his entire body.
Yeah. Except for his exposed brain. His gummy brain.
Jello mold brain.
Red Lake 40 brain. No, because her whole beef for a minute was that, like, you've walked by me every day for the past 10 years and not one of you asked for my name. Mm-hmm. Which, like, fucking fair, because there are certain people that are regulars at my restaurant, at my cafe. Mm-hmm. I know everything about them. They do not know my name. They know nothing. I'm an NPC. So I understand that feeling. And if somebody...
Non-playable Cassie.
Yeah. And if somebody came up and said, hey, so I have an opportunity for your full liberation. People will know your name. Oh, yes, please.
And all you have to do is side with an army of robots.
Yeah.
That may or may not consume cats.
Robots and feline shadow evil terrors.
So... But broadest stroke here, how did you feel about the Next Doctor?
So very upset that his TARDIS wasn't a horse painted. Delighted it was a hot air balloon. That's kind of cool.
I had a feeling you were going to be really happy when you saw it was a big blue balloon.
Devastated it wasn't a horse. And also so angry that I could not, for the life of me, find a single Victorian era medical instrument that resembled his fucking screwdriver. Because that's what I was doing for a good portion of this.
You were just trying to find, just like someone must have, like, for lobotomies, you must have used a screwdriver for that.
Lobotomies weren't invented until much later. But I was like, there has to be something. Because he shows you the handle. So I went, if I can find an instrument that vaguely resembles the handle, I'll be good. I could not find a single wooden-handled medical instrument to save my life. I cannot argue my way into this point, and I'm so angry about that.
I'm a little surprised you didn't just say a screwdriver. I mean, you would sort of stumble into the idea that the Next Doctor was a medical doctor.
Yeah, I was going with a doctor theme. I understand where I made that assumption and why I chose what I chose. I'm just mad that I can't, like... The persuasion check for me right now is astronomically high. Even with any added bonuses, I don't think I can match it.
No, this was a dud for the Cassie Professi, unfortunately.
I will say, though, I do really like that the next Doctor, quote unquote, was dressed in all orange and yellow.
Yeah, it's a really nice contrast, especially from David Tennant, whose primary is brown and blue.
Yeah.
So it's a nice, like, warm and cool contrast they have.
Orange is the contrasting color.
Mm-hmm.
So the other, or the, I'm just dubbing him Dr. David. I know that his name is Jackson, but Dr. Mm-hmm. David sounds better.
I will even say in the credits, I believe he is credited as the next Doctor. He is not credited under Jackson Lake.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just really nice to see that that Dr. David could not be more opposite from David Tennant's blue.
Yeah, but then there's a very like male bravado about him that you see a lot in Tennant, at least for the first half. But when he still thinks he's the Doctor, when he finds out he's Jackson, he gets kind of mopey for understandable reasons.
Well, yeah. And there's a part that's like, this man has been endowed with a personal history and backstory that he should not be able to fully comprehend or understand, but he does somehow, which does make him extraordinary in that sense. Because I feel like if it was anybody else, they would have
gone insane.
Oh, they would have killed themselves for sure.
Well, they even say that sort of this was almost a way that kept him from doing that. Is, you know, the shock of losing his wife to the Cybermen
and having his, dare I say, beautiful child taken from him
with his thick, luscious lashes.
It's just a little mascara and chapstick. My God, I've never seen a Furby come to life, but if I had.
A fur baby.
Jeez. It's like the Gerber baby.
Now we know what happened to him.
There's gotta be one more. I did draw a very scary picture
of his eyes.
That's all I could
and
see.
His thick, luscious lashes.
And it's like, because like, I know. So growing up, for context, me and my sister are Japanese. For the people in the audience that may or may not know that, I am one quarter Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So we both have very dark, like, thick lashes, but they're not long and luscious. They're pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
Every boy in my family, you included, you, my brother, all of my boy cousins ended up with these like beautiful long CoverGirl lashes.
Oh, you mean these?
Shut up.
And I like flutter them towards you and a breeze comes out like I'm wafting palm fronds at you.
Stop it. And there was something so infuriating to me when I was a kid, because then the response I always got from them was, well, I don't wear all that crap on my eyes like you do. And I'm 8. I'm not wearing mascara.
I'm this many.
I can count my age on my hand. This is ridiculous. So there's just something about, like, there's something so infuriating to me when little boys have nicer lashes than any woman, because I don't get, evolutionarily, it doesn't make sense. It
does not make any sense.
I don't even want to know. I don't need to know what this kid looks like now as a full-on adult man. I don't.
Spat my eyelashes at you very lovingly with my that big was blue doe eyes. You know, in a certain example, I don't look that, my young self would not have looked that much unlike that kid. I hope I would be a better actor than that child.
His perfectly coiffed hair.
It's like, I'm being reunited with my father after who knows how long, and it just stone-faced, like, yeah, I guess you're my dad. Like, that's what the director told me.
It feels odd for me to call a child beautiful, but
well, we know what you mean. Is there's
it's there's got, like, a cherubim quality about this kid, because like there were lots of child extras in this particular episode. The Cybermen were building a child army, I guess.
Yeah, they needed, because there's no gasoline, like, isn't really a thing here. Neither are batteries. So the way that they had to charge their engine was child labor.
Yeah, a child army. And I don't know what it is about Dickensian street urchins. I fucking love them. Love me. What? Oh, boy, what day is it? Well, it's Christmas Eve day, sir.
Yeah, I love that that was how they opened the special.
The year of our Lord, 1841.
I love how that's how they opened the special, too, is the doctor going,
you there, boy, what day is this?
Christmas Eve, sir.
Because that's also something that's just really fun to say in the wild. If you've ever, I challenge you to go up to Sam one day and ask him, you there, boy, what day is it? You'll never get a more confused look. There was very little CG in this one.
Yeah.
The, like, scopes or like the wide angles of Victorian London.
Yeah, and the Cyber King himself, obviously.
Yeah.
But basically,
you mean the Iron Giant? Yes.
Cyberman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the very beginning, as one of the cyber shades is running up the side of the building.
Yeah, you can probably assume there's some wires that have been erased there.
Well, I don't even think wires. It just kind of looked like he was not drawn in, but like kind of picked up from a different shot.
Like maybe he was chroma keyed in, you mean?
I think so. It looked very different and weird.
I will say that when we'd first brought up the Cybermen, you had mentioned seeing someone with like a copper face. So like you had mentioned something to that effect.
Yeah.
I had thought the cyber shades were what you were talking about. I had thought maybe this was the episode you had seen over your father's shoulder at some point.
No, because my dad never watched Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Ever. Through osmosis, I have picked up. I had picked up quite a bit. I don't remember cyber shades at all.
Okay. Yeah, those are kind of fun. Just the idea that, you know, the Cybermen need to convert things to propagate. They don't like reproduce sexually or asexually, for that matter. They reproduce by harvesting the brains of other living creatures.
Mm.
But they typically only do higher life forms, ones that can be converted to think like a Cyberman. But when they're in this like 19th century Victorian era low tech world, they don't have access to all of their usual toys. And so the best they can do is convert cats.
Which cats then and dogs grow into horrible humanoid fur monsters,
which are just a Cyberman's face and then like a suit of black fabric.
What's the word I'm looking for? It's those like suits that you wear if you're going hunting. And they're like grass.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it is either.
Because I always say gimp suit. It is not a gimp suit.
No. That is a very
suit,
different thing.
Right.
What did you say?
Ghillie suit?
Yeah, I think it might be a ghillie suit. This is just an all black ghillie suit.
Yeah. Horrible fur monster.
Or like they asked to borrow like a furry's outfit that they would take to a convention.
But they
like,
just glued on a Cyberman face.
Exactly.
My favorite is to just watch them in the background doing like vaguely animalistic, like
they're just all like twitching about. They're like looking around the corner.
Yeah, it's a very acting 101 like movement. Because if you've
very theatrical,
you have cat.
Yes.
Cat don't move. In fact, cat right now has been hit by a truck.
She's just laying on the floor. Like as flat as she can be because it's so hot right now.
The directions that the cyber shades were given were to just act like an animal. That was the one episode they got David Attenborough on, fun fact. To give them animalistic moving exercises.
That's pretty fun. I like that.
It's not. That is a made up fact.
Oh, well, never mind.
No, why would I have a fun? I'm not in this show. I just comment
I'm not
on
in
it.
This show.
I'm giving you my own personal hot takes.
So what did you think of David Morrissey and his interpretation of as the next Doctor?
I can't say that I loved it because the show did lose me a little bit in the middle, specifically when they're going through all of Jackson Lake's stuff.
Yeah, when it becomes like
talking about, you know, his life. I did like Rosita. I thought she was cool.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you caught her name being Rosita, because there's a little bit of Rose in her, just like there's a little bit of Doctor in the next Doctor.
No, she was just kind of a badass.
Well, and that was why they named her Rosita. That was a cute little thing from Russell T. Davies.
Ah, I see. Yeah, cheeky.
He was like, if there's a little bit of Doctor in there, we're going to put a little bit of Rose in here. That's why her name is Rosita, a little rose.
I thought it was because there were little flowers on her dress.
I mean, that was probably a decision from the costuming department to put little flowers on there to match.
I can't say that I would have loved to see more. Mm-hmm. I think that this guy was very nice.
Yeah. Just he's a very like classic man. You know what I mean? Like he probably would have given it almost like a 50s sci-fi kind of feel. Like the kind of a doctor that would put up fisticuffs. 1-2. a pugilist doctor.
Yeah.
Because he talks a lot from his diaphragm.
I do like that he is able to convince David Tennant Doctor to stay for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's a part of him that's like, he's very he's very compelling.
He's charismatic.
He's compelling in a way that's like, all right, cool. Like, if he had been the Doctor for more than just this one episode, would have been fine.
Well, I think, especially at the end, I like that characterization he's taking more than when he's pretending to be the Doctor. And there's a part of it where it's like, I do think that maybe what David Morrissey was doing was because he knows the Doctor is a hero, but he doesn't even know that David Tennant was the Doctor. Like, he can't recognize that face.
He understands that the Doctor's job is to save the day.
Yeah, so I think
it's like it kind of reminds me a little bit of like in The Incredibles,
mm-hmm.
when Buddy is just going alongside Mr. Incredible to also be a hero, but doesn't actually understand that he is a child and also not a superhero, does not have the same powers.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little bit like that because, frankly, I've always felt sorry for Syndrome.
Well, yeah, it's a very a very understandable place to come from, but he takes too far.
Yes. But this Doctor reminds me a little bit of a child watching somebody and goes, I have these big shoes to fill, mm-hmm. so I'm going to do my best.
Yeah, there's like a performativeness to him where he plays him almost like what you assume Jackson Lake thinks the Doctor is like,
mm-hmm.
where he does have a lot of like swashbuckling bravado that David Tennant kind of doesn't. David Tennant's more like he does a lot of running, yeah. but a lot of his like most action-y moments are like dramatic monologues, not a lot of.
If the Doctor is having to fight, it is a last resort.
Yeah.
He is not actively trying to put himself into danger.
Or it's an act of defense, like in this one where he sword fights two of the Cybermen.
Yeah. Which there is still a part of me that is surprised that he does what he does to convince the Cybermen that he is, in fact, the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Just because if they're not going after him, then he has an easier way in.
I mean, I suppose you could also think that him telling them that gets them off of Jackson Lake's back.
True.
Like they're not hunting this guy that is just a guy. He's a math teacher. Jackson Lake is a math teacher. He's not that kind of hero that the Doctor is. And, you know, the Doctor has also been dealing with, you know, as he says at the end of the episode, he's dealing with a lot of loss. A lot of his companions leave him,
mm-hmm.
Or worse, like they're hurt or they leave because they break his heart in one way or another. And I'm sure that there's a part of him that's like, I cannot in good conscience cause me to lose another person because I decided to play myself safe, if that makes sense.
Well, especially since we even saw it in the last couple episodes. Part of the Dalek's argument is that the Doctor finds people who are willing to risk their lives,
mm-hmm.
and to die for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure that there's a little bit of leftover. He doesn't want anybody else to die for him.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
It sort of echoes back to, you know, the first Dalek episode where he says you would make a good Dalek. There's a part of it where I think the Doctor always tries to run away from that notion, even when the Daleks aren't involved.
I mean, they're tangentially involved, just in the sense that the Cybermen are a lifelong enemy of the Doctor.
Yeah, for sure.
That was designated a lie. Have you no pity? Correct.
Just when the Cybermen get sassy, everything is improved.
God.
It still just echoes back to when the Daleks and the Cybermen bumped into each other.
I still really
Daleks have no concept of elegance.
That is obvious.
That was designated a lie. There's a part of me that really likes that Russell T. Davies writes the Cybermen just a little gay. Just a little, like, a little, they all have, like, he gives them that, like, attitude, that, like, mean girl disposition, which is so funny for a hive mind alien race for them to be the mean girls.
I need you to do something for me right now.
Okay.
Can you please do as many Cybermen quotes as you can? Not in a Cyberman voice, but in a how they should sound. Because I think that's half of it, is because they all sound like this.
That was designated a lie.
More.
Or we could do the reverse mean girl quotes and Cybermen. On Wednesdays, we wear pink.
But it makes sense, because that is not an emotional response. That is order. We are equipped to survive. We are only interested in survival. Anything else is of no importance. Your deaths will not affect us.
Emotions have tormented you all of your life. Now you will be set free. This is your liberation.
This is your liberation.
Don't go digging too deep, or you might get some, might get spoilies.
Delete. No, delete.
We have freedom from disease, protection against heat and cold. True mastery. Do you prefer to die in misery?
Oh, man, that was Daleks, though. I found somebody did the my favorite argument between the two.
Oh, okay.
But just Dalek going, you propose an alliance? That is correct. Request denied. Request denied.
Bitch.
Hostile elements will be deleted.
There's a part of it that's, I can't
exterminate.
And it always catches me by surprise too that they do it.
Delete
is the Cybermen sachet away.
Delete. Exterminate. Bitch.
It always catches me by surprise too, and I think it's just because it's so antithetical to what their vibe is, even though they've done it so many times.
Well, I think that's the thing, though, is that if you're writing a Cyberman, you have to write them as straightforward as you can, but to avoid it being dull, if you add a little bit of spunk to it, anything then said in that particular voice is like it. Yeah, of course, that makes sense. They're devoid of emotion, so they can't feel anything. So you can't have any lines or dialogue that evokes emotion.
Yeah.
Unless you do, in which case they can go, that is unnecessary.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of, like, when you extract all empathy out of a character, but you still leave them with this, like, sense of superiority, there is a sort of, like, mean girl attitude to it.
It's very, like, classic villain.
This girl is a fugly skank. Do not trust her.
That is the ugliest effing skirt I have ever seen.
When Mercy's being crowned Cyber King, just one of the Cybermen in the back. She doesn't even go here.
I do like that she just goes, well, I guess I'm the Cyber King. She doesn't try to change it to Cyber Queen. She just goes, no, it's fine.
Well, it's,
I am stronger than Cybermen because I still have total control over my own emotions.
Which feels a little weird.
It is a little silly, but also this woman scares me, so I allow it.
Yeah, there's a good...
She wears red to a funeral.
Doesn't just wear red. She brings a red umbrella.
It's snowing.
Frozen
rain.
What I mean by that is she wants you to know that she's giving attitude before you see the rest of her.
She's protecting herself from the elements. It's the fact that everybody there is like, a woman shouldn't be here. You need to go. You need to leave. Why are you wearing red? She just goes, what's my name? Huh? What's my name? None of you have asked my name.
I liked that when we had watched it, you would turn to me like, this would be such a bad thing right now.
Oh my God.
And then all of them like agreed with you. They were like, it's bad enough that you're here by the grave, but to come dressed as a harlot.
Yes.
I enjoyed that moment of you being like, the show isn't treating this properly. And then like immediately it's like, oh no, they do. This is the point.
Oh, Manzers. Well, I was waiting and I was really hoping that they would.
Yeah.
They would address
it. It's really nice when the show can like be accurate.
Yes.
Up to history. Like
it's nice when the show cares about history.
Yeah. Well, because it makes the show feel real. Like it's real enough in the beginning
it's not real.
It was real to me.
Was real to me.
It's, you know, that kind of applying reality to the first half of the story means that by the time you get to there's a giant metal man wandering around London in 1850. That seems a little weird. You could buy into that because you're like, okay, everything up to now had verisimilitude. That now that this one anachronism pops up, you're like, okay, I can accept this as being my buy-in.
A walking nuclear warhead that has risen out of the Thames. Sure. It simply disappears through a time vortex that the doctor needed to wait to have load.
Yeah, he made a time gun and fired the time gun to send it into the vortex.
What the fuck? But the doctor never gets a thank you. So everybody, if I know anything about the doctor, is that he never gets thanked. Thank you, doctor!
Woohoo! Yay!
Which had the same energy as everybody saying, doctor, at the same time.
Doctor, doctor, doctor. They just start doing the wave for him.
Which, like, on the one hand, I do appreciate that Dr. Dave went, I know this man. At this point, he knows the doctor better than he knows himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has the ability to say, Oh, this man needs a little love. Everybody leaves him. He's alone in this world, except for right now in this moment, we can give him love. He just saved my whole time. He saved my son. My beautiful son. That's my son. That's my boy.
Speaking of his son, that is the one like really strong gripe I have with this episode.
Is the son.
Well, not the son. I feel like Jackson should have saved his own kid.
I feel like the kid should have saved himself because he was just kind of on the platform, not fucking moving.
Well, what I mean by that is there was this crisis that he had in the like between the second and third acts where he realizes that he's not the doctor. He's not the hero. And
he specifically stays home in his, might I add, I was not far off with the TARDIS being a horse because he does live in a stable.
Yeah, it was parked next to a stable.
Oh my God. And the entire time you can hear horse sounds in the back. And I went,
the horse is out there going, I'm not the TARDIS.
Not the TARDIS.
I'm not the TARDIS, Wilbur. But there's a part of it where, you know, he's saying, I'm not really the doctor. I'm not really the hero. And the doctor goes, no, what you got was just data and facts and figures from this info stamp. You, like, the bravery all came from within you. But then his son is on this platform and he freezes up and the Doctor has to be the one that saves him. Like, that's Jackson's moment to realize he's still a hero, even though he's not a even though he's not the Doctor.
Yeah.
Like, it's not bad. It's just, I feel like it's a missed opportunity.
I think it's the fact that, or like, the reason that happens is because earlier, or it doesn't justify it, but he does have that moment of being a hero because he does choose to stay in his stable house and send Rosita with the Doctor because he knows that the Doctor always has a companion. So he goes, just go help. You're helpful. Go help him. And then as they're, you know, facing Mercy, he appears through a doorway and starts attacking the Cybermen with his bandolier of Cybermen canisters.
Cyberman, this town ain't big enough for the two of us.
So he does have a moment of being a hero.
Yeah.
Well, it's upsetting that that moment can't continue on to him saving his own son.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been a good conclusion to his
porcelain doll child.
Yeah, especially because, you know, a lot of it was that he broke down when his wife died. And so there is a part of it where it's like he breaks down because he sees it happening again. He sees his son dying. But I feel like it would have been a nice rounding of his character arc if this time he's like, no, I'm not breaking down. I'm doing it for real this time. I'm going to be the hero. And also just to prove that the Doctor was right, that it wasn't believing he's the Doctor that made him a hero. It was being courageous.
Yes.
I did really enjoy when we do see his TARDIS and it's a big hot air balloon and he's come up with a different anagram or a different acronym for TARDIS. Tethered Aerial Release Developed in Style, which is just, it's a really pretty balloon. That's what that means.
I like that he knew that TARDIS was important. So then he spent several hours trying to figure out what TARDIS could possibly stand for. He chose the vessel he wanted, and then he spent the next, like, 45 minutes with Rosita figuring out what on earth that could mean.
The Doctor's like, oh, yeah, that's really nice. I do like that they use it. I do like that that becomes a plot point, that he actually gets in the hot air balloon and flies up to go talk to Mercy and the Cybermen.
Well, because I'd imagine that it's easier to control that than the call box TARDIS. Or the Doctor went, we have this tool, let's use it. I've never flown one of these.
Can you imagine if it was an outhouse, though, if they have to, like, let's go into the TARDIS? And
it's very Chitty Chitty Bang Bang then.
And they're like in the confined, like, actual space of an outhouse, talking
the posh,
like
posh traveling life, the traveling life for me. I think that's where I got outhouse from, was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, because that is the grandfather's, like, special place.
Another good moment is when the Doctor needs to get in that balloon. He needs help from the guy that works at the gas company.
Yeah.
And he's like, come and help me. And he's like, are you crazy? I'm not going out there. The Doctor's like, I'll give you 5-pound notes. And he's like, okay. It's just like, it'd be like, hey, can you come on this? Can you help me, like, defy death and save everyone? I'll give you $5.
Can you help me jump my car so I can fly into the sunset?
I need to make a Thelma and Louise jump. Can you come over here and, like, kickstart my car so I can jump off this cliff? And I do like that Jackson gets a little moment to step inside the TARDIS, like the thing that was in his mind that he couldn't quite put together.
He couldn't comprehend it.
Yeah. Even when he actually is inside it, he's like, oh, this is too much for me.
This is ridiculous. Wonderful, but ridiculous.
which I like that as being, I feel like that's actually a pretty good reason why somebody wouldn't go with the Doctor.
Yeah.
Because, like, going on an adventure, like, for most people would sound incredible. But there's also a part of it's like, if you had to wrap your head around stepping into a phone booth, but inside it was
a phone booth during a time when phone booths do not exist.
Yeah. Or I guess for him, an outhouse. You're stepping into an outhouse, but for some reason, it's the size of Buckingham Palace inside of it, but only on the inside. Like, that could really hurt someone's brain.
I like the idea that he immediately got a migraine and went, nope, because I've done very much the same thing. I step outside, sun hurt eyes. I go, not today.
Well, it's sort of reminiscent of when Mickey first said no.
Yeah.
Not said no, he was rejected. Eccleston said he's not invited. But you remember when when Rose and Mickey first stumble out of the TARDIS, Mickey's like freaked the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
There's something reminiscent of that, where it's like there are certain people that just cannot handle being with the Doctor on a very basic level.
Yeah. But it's after that moment that he is able to convince the Doctor to stay for dinner at midnight.
On Christmas.
Yeah, that was one other like tiny baby gripe. It's midnight. It is canonically midnight. Why is everybody in their day clothes?
Because they're all doing Christmas parties.
No, nobody's in their fine dress like they're at a Christmas party. They are in their at home clothing, but it's midnight. Arguably, you'd be in bed.
Yeah, none of them have work, and they're all waiting for Santa.
You know what? Fair. They're all waiting around Scrooge's house to see if he wakes up a changed man.
They're all being visited by three ghosts.
You know what? We've never considered that. They're all rehearsing their lines so they can sing with the Muppets in the morning.
With a thankful heart, with an endless joy. We do get another Christmas special in a little bit.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, because there's only two stories between this one and the next Christmas special.
Huh.
Yeah. The next Christmas.
So is this like in the scope of when these episodes are airing? Is this a year in between then, where it's this one and then the next like couple specials, and then it's another year that passes?
So there are. David Tennant at this time, David Tennant has three specials left. The last one has two parts. One aired Christmas Day, one aired New Year's Day. So the next one aired in April 2009, and the one after that aired in November 2009.
Okay, so there is a lot of breathing room between everything. A
lot of breathing room here. The show effectively took a year off to film Matt Smith's first season, because I believe there wasn't a huge gap between January and Matt Smith. I believe he started in March.
There'll be nephew and niece to me.
Yes, and then April 2010 is when Matt Smith's takes place. So only a 4-month gap happens. So while they're doing this, Matt Smith's first era is filming.
Okay.
And that tends to be pretty consistent. It doesn't happen all the time, but especially when they're changing showrunners, there will be a not necessarily a gap year, but a year of slower releases. For them to basically pivot show running, to pivot production.
Okay.
So, and next time is our switch to HD, and also is our 200th episode of Doctor Who.
Woo!
Well, not our 200th. That is the 200th story of Doctor Who since the 60s.
Woo!
Right? So, we will watch The Planet of the Dead on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Delete. Delete.
Cassie, stop trying to make delete happen.
D-E-L-E-T-E, bitch.
Control alt your face.
Whoa. Rude.
Get in, loser. We are going deleting.
I'm not going to lie. That might be my favorite bit we've ever done on this podcast. I have been laughing about it the entire way through this edit. If you've got some other Cyberman quotes you think would work as a mean girl, or the reverse, obviously, be sure to send them to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WimDPod. That's WIMDPOD. I've got to be sure to post Cassie's picture of that little boy's eyes, too, because that drawing is something else. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast if you'd like to hear more, and give us a good rating on whatever platform you're listening on right now to help us with the algorithms that control our very lives. Next week, it's Planet of the Dead, so bring your sand shoes next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whosdays.